And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
I got the horse right here, the name is Paul Revere, and here's the guy that says if the weather's clear,
I'm can do, Valentine, can do, line.
This guy the says the horse can do,
but look at Epitaph, he wins it by a half, this according to this year's telegraph.
For Paul Revere I'll bite, a hairy foot's all right, of course it all depends if it rained last night.
Greetings, sports fans. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Today is Wednesday, April 30th. This is episode 167. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, follow us on YouTube, follow us on Instagram. Give us a look through our pages. If you like what you see, hit that button. Give us a comment. Like it, share it, send it out. Get it out there. Tonight we go around the world of sports, a lot to cover. We'll talk about the NFL draft. We got the Knicks, we got the NBA, we got the Mets and Yanks. We're going to talk about the Kentucky Derby. Behind Darren, the picture of
the Twin Spire.
Let's start with the NFL draft. Darren, you want to start? Should we start local flavor, Jets, Giants?
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't we let Kev kick off the Jets, and then I'll do the Giants.
Got it.
All right. So for the Jets, you know, I think we have to talk – well, we can talk about a little bit of the first round as well. I mean, I tell you, the first six picks went off almost to a T that everybody was expecting.
For the trade. The trade was exciting.
The trade itself, yes. The players selected were
Right.
Oh, absolutely. The players were great, but the trade was exciting in the very beginning. We'll get to that more. I'm sorry.
The trade shook it up a little bit. So at seven, you're sitting there, the Jets, looking at either Membu or Warren. You know, it's which one you want. You want the bookend tackle to Fashanu, who hopefully will be there for 10 years, or you want the weapon Warren. They went Membu, and it turned out probably to work out okay because come around the second round, they get Mason Taylor, the tight end, who was the son of Jason Taylor. Yep. And, you know, great pass catcher in college. A little lean, you know, we'll see if he can develop into that all-around blocking receiving tight end. But at the very least, he gives Justin Fields a much-needed weapon. Because you look at Fields' career numbers, he always does well throwing to a tight end. So I think it was very important for them to come out with a tight end. And I'm fine with Taylor and Membu as your combination there. The third round, they may have gotten a steal there. Ezra Thomas, the cornerback. You know, he ran slowly at his draft day workout at the combine. And I think a lot of people get turned off. And a lot of people put too much emphasis on just his 40-yard dash. You look at the film and you look at what he can do on the field. This guy's really good. And I think with Aaron Glenn, if Aaron Glenn likes him at cornerback, that says something.
He's got great size, and he didn't give up any touchdowns last year. You like that. You like those two stats.
Fourth round, we'll see about Arian Smith. I mean, one of the problems with Arian Smith is after they made the pick, his weakness is his hands.
Yeah, he's a reach.
Not what you want to hear about your wide receiver. Track star in high school can blow the top off the coverage. The question is, can he catch the ball? If he can, he's a big weapon. I think their second, fourth.
Just
round
on him, he's a great he can return kicks and he's a great gunner. He gave up 28 yards on 23 punt returns. So the Jets did lose, both gunners from last year. They picked one up in free agency, but I think he's a multi-purpose player for this team. Again, he can run over the top on anybody. I don't know if he can run a full route tree, but if he can hold on to the ball, he's going to be dangerous. It's going to be like watching Necessary Roughness.
Yeah.
They know you're never going to throw to me. The ball is my friend.
And then they trade back up into the fourth round, pick up safety Malachi Moore from Alabama. I think that was a nice sneaky move there to get some more depth in the secondary, specifically a safety. I think they needed some help there. And then the other two picks, you know, by the time you get to the fifth round, you never know. Unless there's somebody that really stands out to you. Unrestricted free agent, probably the big guy they picked up was Brady Cook from Missouri, which is big because he can be the developmental quarterback, because it just announced today that Jordan Travis, who they picked 2 years ago,
last year,
he's retiring. You know, he had that leg injury senior year of at Florida State. He tried rehab and just didn't come back. Doctor's suggestion was, all right, you're done. You know, let's worry about you living your life. Don't worry about coming back as a football player. So Jordan Travis retired. Let's see if Brady Cook. Let's see if they sign anybody else as a UFA. But, you know, that's basically their draft. I think that the top of the draft is very, very good. You know, they've got probably two, maybe three starters. You know, we'll see how much Thomas starts, but I think Thomas plays a huge role in the secondary going forward. Darren, what are your thoughts?
Well, I wanted Warren, but I get the Membo pick. I can't get too upset. Here's the thing, though, with the Jet offensive line, because everyone's like, oh, they're building a wall. So we've had Fashanu. He played one season and got hurt. Like Simpson. Tippmann's been good, but with the Jets centers of the past, the one position the Jets have been actually excellent at, I don't know. He's been okay. I wouldn't call him great, but he's been okay. He's no Mawai. He's no Mangold. He's not even Jim Sweeney as far, or Joe Fields as far as I'm concerned. But he's been okay, all right? I can live with that. Yep. Then you go to the right guard, who we both love, and Vera Tucker, but he's played 4 years. He's been hurt for two of them.
Yeah.
And now we have Membo, who they tell me has to work on his footwork with pass protection, though he didn't give up a sack, so I don't get where that comes from. 3 year starter, road grader. If the offensive line can stay healthy, this could mean something.
Yep.
Mason Taylor, again, everything you said is true. He lines up on the line of scrimmage a lot, doesn't split out much. Not great after the catch, but he catches the ball, so it's not bad. I love Thomas, like you said. Arian Smith, I think, is a dual-role guy. Everybody had him projected as a seventh round. The Jets went and got him in the fourth, so we'll see if it's a reach or if they know something. Yeah. Malachi Moore is the rare five-year starter at Alabama. You don't get that very often, but to start for five straight years at Alabama is pretty damn good. Mo Agha is a linebacker that could rush the passer a little bit, so listen, we'll see. They needed depth at the position, and plus you don't know Quincy Williams after this year. And Barron had an interesting stat about him. He had a 15.5% pressure rate, 10 sacks, and an 84.4 pass rush grade. So they seem to have gotten what they needed. Listen, you know what? The defensive line was probably the one area you expected them to hit. It was a deep draft. They didn't do it. Yep. But they did pick up three guys in free agency that play that role. So we'll find out if they can find someone that can play along with Quinnen Williams or at least be in the rotation with them. We'll see. But overall, I'd say it's a solid draft. I'd call it good. I wouldn't call it great, but I'd call it good.
Yeah, a solid beer.
Darren, how much lower is Taylor compared to Warren?
They're not in the same class. Warren is a better athlete. Warren is a playmaker. Warren can take snaps under center. Warren can throw the ball. He can run the ball in quarterback sneaks. He can run the ball on reverses. These are not things that Taylor can do.
Okay.
What Taylor can do is be an open receiver. And the other thing is that people might forget about a little bit. You know, Fields played with Ruckert at Ohio State, so it's not like he's not familiar with him. So you have – he's played with Garrett Wilson. He's played with Jeremy Ruckert. So these are – they put a couple of guys around him that he's familiar with. So maybe there's something there, too. We don't know. Again, first couple of years for Ruckert have not been – great. We've seen a glimpse here and there, but not really glimpses, I would say. Just a glimpse here and there. So we'll see if Ruckert or Taylor becomes that tight end.
Okay. I know you liked Warren a lot. That's why I wanted to.
Yeah, it's very rare, G, that the Jets get themselves a real, like, game breaker. And again, we don't know. This whole thing's a crapshoot. Let's be honest. We can sit here and everyone's going to get grades and this and that, like everybody freaking knows. But I mean, you know, we're going to find out how these guys, who gets injured easily, who's in the wrong system, who isn't coached up right, and who just doesn't like to get hit. We're going to find all those things out. Okay. And
scale of 1 to 10, how good did you think they did?
7.5, I'd say.
Kev?
Yeah. Somewhere around there. I'd say the B, so maybe 8 out of 10.
Okay. All right. Listen, that's what you want. You need to hit, you know, when you have a draft like this, you need to hit 3-4 guys out of this draft. Otherwise, it's just you're not helping your team at all. So, all right, let's move to the Giants.
I'd actually give them an 8.5 out of 10. I think they had a great draft. They got the best pass rusher in the draft in Abdul Carter, who wanted LT's number. You got to be kidling me. Stop.
LT did it right in a right way
to tell him he wasn't going to let him have his number. But that's balls just to ask for it. My God, these young kids, I don't even get them.
I mean, Carl Banks, maybe.
Maybe. Even LT. Harry Carson, I would laugh at him.
LT?
Come on, man.
I'd laugh at any of these guys. I don't know. If you're good enough to get your number retired, make your own legacy. Get your own freaking number retired.
That's what LT told him.
That's what he told him.
But those are the facts, though. He's right. Then they do the big thing. They trade up for Jackson Dart, okay? And listen, I was the guy that was so high on Ole Miss last year. Yeah. Dart has a good arm. Dart can run. He's tough. I think he's a good player. I mean, Dable obviously fell in love with him. We all, I think, thought that there was a good chance Sanders was the pick when they traded up. Now, I think Kev was the only one, I think, that thought it might be Dart. I think me and Eugenio were on the Sanders bandwagon, right, Kev?
I was, yeah.
I was pretty sure Sanders. I was surprised.
Yeah, I was stunned. And obviously, what was that? Sorry, Kevin.
All three of us thought somebody was trading up into the first round to get Dart, but not with Sanders on the board there at 25.
Correct. That's a very correct statement, Kevin.
But Dable seemed to love him. So I from what I understand, Dable really wanted him, and that's the move that they made. And there you go. So now that ends the career of Tommy DeVito here in New York, as the third quarterback will become Jackson Dart until he becomes the second quarterback at some point.
Well, let's talk about that in a second. Go back, finish that draft.
Absolutely. Then they had Darius Alexander, who's a big defensive tackle out of Toledo, who's going to partner up really nice with Dexter Lawrence. So that's going to be a really good pick. And then the pick everybody likes, Cam Scadabo. Gino can't be happy that he has to go up against Cam. He wanted to watch him play somebody else's team. Tell me I'm wrong, G.
No, you're right.
I mean, just because he's a bowling ball and you don't know what you're going to get from him, but I thought he was a steal in the fourth. I thought he was going to be more of third or early fourth, and he ended up being early fourth, but I really thought more third. Some people were thinking even second. Then they addressed the offensive line with Marcus Embo out of Purdue, who started for 3 years. Good run blocker.
That could be a sneaky – I mean, they move him inside the guard, that could be a real sneaky good pick in the fifth round.
I think so, too. I like their first five picks a lot. The sixth pick is a blocking tight end, and Thomas Fedone the second out of Nebraska. The seventh pick is Corey Black, who's a cornerback. I don't think he had any picks last year, but he did break up some passes. But they got the best blocking tight end in the draft. They got the best pass rusher in the draft. They got a quarterback with arguably the number two quarterback in the draft. They got one of the best defensive tackles in the draft. They got a running back everybody likes. And they got an offensive lineman that could really help this team out. So I think the Giants overall had an excellent draft, in my opinion. I don't know what you guys' thoughts are.
If you're a Giant fan, you have to love that draft.
You've
got the guy who's definitely in line to be the defensive rookie of the year in Carter.
Absolutely.
Your quarterback of the future in Dart. Just a tremendously fun player to watch in Scadabo. Once Dart gets in there, I mean, the Giants might actually become fun to watch. When's the last time you can say that about the Giants?
You can't.
All right.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
So I thought they had a really good draft. I liked them trading up to get the quarterback. They got Jackson Dart. My only problem now is you need Jackson Dart to play. So. No,
you won't see him until week 13 or 14 when they're out of it. You might see him the last 2-3 games of the year.
Okay, if you are Dable, that's how you're going to keep your job, is the more he plays. I don't know how more simplistic I can state it. That's it.
Their goal is to stay in games defensively and try to win the game with Russell Wilson and try to do just enough like he did with Pittsburgh last year.
Okay,
the problem is that they're not Pittsburgh.
Jackson Dart doesn't play. What's their record?
Listen, the best the Giants are going to do is 7-10.
Okay.
In my opinion.
And here's the point. Dable goes 7-10. He's not back next year. He's not.
Well, he shouldn't have been back this year either.
I agree, Kev. but you've now – So I like the draft. Dart, if you're tying your rope to Dart, fine, you got it, okay? But you can't have him not play. You can't have him play until week 14 when you are through 13 games. You are, I don't know, what are you? 4-9?
We'll listen, see. The fact of the matter is we have to see where the schedule breaks out, where who they're playing and when. The schedule is brutal for this team. No, I'm just being honest. The schedule is brutal.
Talking generalities
Week one, Russell Wilson gives them the best chance to win of the three quarterbacks. And they're going to keep doing that until there comes a point when the season's lost. Maybe it's week 9. Maybe the Giants look so bad, they're 2-7. And they go, we've got no other choice but to play Dart. Russell Wilson finds some of them. Maybe they're competitive. Maybe they're sitting there at 5-4, depending on how the schedule breaks out. Guess what? Russell Wilson stays in at quarterback.
I agree with everything you're saying, except 5-4 seems very unrealistic if we are just saying that we think they're only going to win 7 or 8 games in a year. It's very unrealistic, like, 5-4.
It's depending on how the schedule will play out.
Kev, I know, but at best case, what are they? 3-4 through 7? I mean, we're predicting them that we only think they're going to win 8 games, 9 games at best. So you win 8 games. Let's just go the first half of the season, you win 4. The second half of the season, you win 4. So there you are. You're 4-3, 4-4. So when does he get on the field? Because the less he gets on the field, Jackson Dart, the bigger chance Dable is not coming back the next year.
But do you think that the Giants are really going to let Dable and Shane stay on if they have to rebuild again? Shane definitely gone if this team is 4-9 or whatever it is, because he didn't do the job. No, I'm just being honest, right?
So Shane,
unless Wilson wins, Shane is gone anyway.
Derek,
and most likely Dable is gone too. So it doesn't matter. They just have to try to win games.
I understand your point, but you now drafted the quarterback of your future. That's what you have now tied the rope to.
But it may not be their quarterback.
Okay, then there it is.
That's the one thing. I think that they have to rely on Wilson, otherwise they won't be there.
Okay, so then – how do we grade the draft? How do you grade the draft? 8.5 because a Dart is on this team. If you don't think he's going to play 3 games,
I graded this draft on 4 of the other picks as much as Dart.
Okay, all right.
They got the best defensive player in the draft. I mean, they got Abdul Carter. I mean, they got a running back that we all want to watch play. They got a great defensive tackle. They have an offensive lineman they can slide inside, and they got an extra blocker, a tight end, and they added a quarterback.
As far as Abdul Carter, they got the best collegiate player on the board, the best defensive collegiate player. We have no idea what he's going to be like in the NFL.
We don't know what any of these guys are going to be like in the NFL.
I mean,
I understand, but, you know, I can't get past this with this team because – if we all think they're only going to win 8 games, then what the hell are we doing? What the hell are they doing with Dart not playing? All right, let's go to the rest of the NFL.
Listen, I get your points, G, but they're not going to keep their jobs if they're going to Dart early. They're not going to give them a second rebuild. Mara made that kind of perfectly clear at the end of last year, in my opinion.
If Dart's starting week 1, what do you think is going to be the record? 4-13?
At best.
Again, but...
And if Wilson plays, what are they looking at?
7-10?
All of a sudden, you're trying to get from 7-10 to 8-9-8. 2 more wins, you get some fluke wins. 9-8, put you into the wild cards.
I know I'm a big Washington fan, but they are at best, the third best team in that division.
Probably the fourth best, unfortunately. Dallas also had a good draft.
Yeah. Listen, I agree, but opinion. I'm just saying, at best. So the fact that we think you're going to win, you know, if they go 9-8.
That's a great, great year for them.
Great, except the fact that you did nothing to develop Jackson Dart, and that's the problem.
Well, maybe he's not ready yet to play the pro game. We don't know that.
Okay.
Let's see what happens.
All right.
Nothing wrong.
I agree with your point. I agree with your point.
Aaron Rodgers sat for a couple of years. Jordan Love sat for a couple of years.
My only point is
Mahomes after a year.
Matt Mahomes
everyone graded them an A minus on their draft. All the experts gave them an A minus on their draft, and that included the fact that they traded up to get Jackson Dart, the quarterback of their future. And if they don't play the quarterback of their future, then that A minus is not an A minus.
No, it's not.
That's the problem. And that's my problem with this whole thing.
So when Green Bay drafted Aaron Rodgers at 24, that's not an A minus draft? And he sat for 3 years behind Brett Favre?
Different NFL now, Kev. Different NFL. It is. It's a different NFL. Okay. And by the way, there's no Brett Favre here.
All right, Jordan Love sat for how many years?
Again, there's no
Brett Favre. That's only 5 years ago.
Okay, and who is he sitting behind? Russell Wilson, who couldn't play last year, who got benched?
Russell Wilson did not get benched.
He didn't get benched.
They benched.
He took over for Fields. Fields got my quarterback got benched.
I mean, come
on. Gino, I get it. I think that
quarterbacks to these guys. Come on.
Jackson Dart to them. By the way, hey, he's 26 years old when the season starts. It's not like he's a kid. Number two, if they think Jackson Dart outperforms, he'll play. You saw when Russell Wilson came in as a rookie, as a fourth-round pick. He outplayed the big money they spent on Flynn, and he got the job. If Dable thinks he is at least equivalent to Russell Wilson, he'll play. The fact is, Dable's coaching for his job, so the best player will play. He can't worry about development. He's got to worry about winning, or he's out.
That's understood.
I think I lost your face, G, but that's all right. I can't see you, Gino.
We lost the video for G.
Did we lose the audio, too? We might have. So let's talk about the rest of the – oh, you're back, Gino.
Sorry about that.
Gino was angry at us, and he hung up on us, but he's back.
Gino said, I'm done fighting. Click.
So let's get to the Jacksonville trade, Kev.
Wow.
Thoughts?
That – a lot to give up to move up from 5-2, including the first round of next year and the third round of this year and everything else. Now, what you can say is that they are getting basically two players for the price of one anyway, if they play Hunter enough both ways. They needed a weapon for Trevor Lawrence, so that's definitely a big plus there. I think he's going to play a lot of wide receiver for them, and I think he can be a very effective nickel back on defense. You know, you don't want him playing 95% of the plays like he did in college.
Can't do it.
But you also hear the other argument saying college is a much, much quicker game than the NFL. College, how many games do we watch with 90, 100 players? 110 plays?
No, you're right.
And the NFL is much, much less.
The thing is, you can hide yourself a little bit on a play or two here in college.
Yes.
And at the NFL level, you can't on defense.
Now, for Jacksonville, I think they had to make a big swing. You've got a new coach, a new GM. They swung for the fences here. And I think Hunter might be that guy because he can go both ways to make it worth his while, to make it worth their while to make that swing. I think he's that dynamic. Like I said, you're getting two players in one with him. I think that's why you can justify giving up a first rounder next year, because you're getting basically a second player.
So the interesting thing about it, that should have been the talk of the weekend. But, Gino, it's not the talk of the weekend. There's something else happened this weekend in the draft, G. Why don't you tell us a little about that?
Everybody passed on Shedeur Sanders.
Well, not everybody. Everybody through the first four rounds.
We were going to send Mel Kiper to therapy.
Oh, my God. This little meltdown was pathetic.
And not only did he fall to the fifth round when Cleveland took him with the 144th pick, but it was – the second quarterback that they took, because two rounds before that, they took Dylan Gabriel from Oregon. So
what the hell happened?
Kev, why don't you tell us what the hell happened?
What do you think happened?
I think.
Yep.
You know, you start hearing some of the stuff about, oh, he really wasn't that good in college. I think that's just a cover. This kid is talented. This kid can find the open receiver. He completes 70%+ of his passes in college. He's a terrific passer. they didn't want to deal with the bullshit with Dion. And they didn't want the whole entourage and everything else. And I think you have enough old school owners in the NFL that don't want to deal with some of this. I think there is, and maybe I'm wrong here, I think there was, and you can tell me about the stats about how many black players were taken in the first round and all, I think there is still some hint of racism on the part of some of the owners who passed them up.
They didn't want to deal with, gonna do a racism.
They didn't want to deal with either. They didn't want to deal with all the other stuff that comes with Shedeur Sanders.
I don't think that was it. I think it's that they didn't want to have to deal with Dion.
I think it's more than that, guys. I don't think they wanted to deal with Shedeur.
Yeah.
Shedeur showed up. He was the only player that showed up to some of the meetings with the coaches and GMs with an entourage.
Yeah.
Nobody does that. Dable gave them all an assignment, the quarterbacks. Shedeur didn't do it. Shedeur and his father making the statements beforehand. If we end up in Cleveland, we'll try to get out of there. Now they ended up in Cleveland. It's kind of funny that way, right? You know, Shedeur, listen, when we watch college football, we watch a decent amount of it. Kevin and I watch a little more than you, G, but you got into it more this year. Shedeur Sanders was a talent when we watched the games.
Yeah.
Okay. He was a guy you wanted to watch. He was good. He was very effective. Was he the should he have fallen to the fifth round? Probably not. Is he the best athlete of a quarterback? No, but he's also not a can't miss. So when you're not a can't miss and you have an attitude problem, this is what happens. I'll pass on you. If you're not going to be a guy that's good for my locker room and you're not a can't miss prospect, listen, this isn't like drafting Bo when Tampa Bay, he tells him he's not going to go there. And they're like, I can't pass on this guy. This isn't like drafting Dion. This isn't like not drafting Elway or Eli or other guys that are forced hands over the years. This is Shedeur Sanders, who to me was probably, if it was last year's draft, was a second-round talent. Right? This year's draft, we thought he was a first-round talent. Thought he was the second-best quarterback in the draft, even though you could argue dart both ways, this, that, and the other thing. But, I mean, when you hear that he's bringing an entourage, that he's not paying attention, that he walks into these meetings and keeps his headphones on, when you hear all this stuff – now. Again, we're not in these meetings, so this could all be hearsay and crap.
Yeah.
I don't see the racism, Kev, because these guys just want to win. I can't see it. I mean, you know, I don't know. The face of the league right now is black. It's Patrick Mahomes. And the other face of the league is Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe as a white guy, it's easy for me to say.
Yeah.
But to me, the most dominant and the new face of the league is Jaden Daniels. Also a black quarterback. The first pick of the draft, Ward, another black quarterback, distant relative to Kevin here. So we have some, you know, so I think that stigma's got to go a little bit. I think that's just an outcry from people because they didn't want to see him fall. But these are the same people that probably cost him, that told him he was great. And this is what happens with NIL money. When you're making millions of dollars in college, the contract does not matter to you. He's already made his millions. And then he threw a party for himself and made another million. Because people had to give him a GoFundMe because he was only worth a few million already. Plus, he grew up wealthy. I don't get how it works out. But this is probably the biggest stunner we had. I mean, I thought he was for sure in the second round. Then it was like, all right, someone's going to trade up for the top of the third round. No, fourth round. Boom. And then you're hearing, I mean, it wasn't me. Boomer Esiason said it. That he spoke to at least three owners that had him taken off the board that didn't want to deal with him.
Yeah.
Which could be part of Dion, could be part of Shedeur. But, you know, these guys have to be a little more humble when they're going in there. They can't act like they reinvented the league because how many guys – and Mel Kiper's tirade is a joke.
Oh.
Quarterbacks for 50 years. Mel, you've been getting quarter. You told me that Zach Wilson was a can't miss.
Jimmy
Clausen, the fifth pick of the draft. He's going to be a star. I mean, he's
DeMarcus Russell.
And we all are. But listen, every pick, every position.
Everybody's
going to be horrible. Nobody told me that Dwayne Robertson wasn't worth trading up for. No one told me that Vernon Golston wasn't going to be a star. I mean, I'm just going through the Jets.
Yeah.
No one told me that Thomas was a reach. No one told me any of these things. Zach Wilson was going to be great. Great arm talent. Oh, all the intangibles. I mean, listen, Sam Darnold was going to revolutionize the sport. I mean, come on. He was supposed to take the mantle away from Brady. This is what we get as Jet fans. So I'm just saying, and I'm not trying to kill Mel, because I think he made a niche for himself. He, you know, and he knows it, and he knows what he's doing. But nobody can predict how these kids are going to play. It depends on the situation they're sent to, who they're back, who they're playing behind, who their coordinator is, what scheme they're putting them in. There's a million things that are way beyond our comprehension. We watched the games. We saw Shedeur Sanders. We all thought he was pretty good.
Yeah.
He was a guy I enjoyed watching play. So I'm not here to rip him. But the fact is that if you're going to go in there cocky and arrogant, if any of these things are partly true, then he deserved what he got, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing is, when it comes down to it, do some of these teams really want to deal with Deion?
No.
And that's, I do honestly think that that's out there, because let's say he goes to Miami. He went to Miami and Tua goes down in game two. All you're going to do is hear Deion chirping about his son getting in there and playing. And I don't think any of these teams want to even deal with it.
He's also coaching a college football team, so he's not going to have as much time to do the chirping as everybody thinks.
Yeah.
But
it's listen, a full-time – college is probably harder than the pros now.
He could
– that brutal to keep these kids happy.
He could take 3 minutes out of his press conference.
No doubt. You're right.
And bring it up. So, you know, any other draft – anything else in the draft you want to bring up?
Of the other quarterbacks drafted, who was your favorite pick and fit with the team, Darren?
You know what? I really like McCord. I thought that was a good sign. I wanted him to go. He went to Philly, who didn't need him.
Yeah.
But I thought the Jets, I would have liked to see them make a little reach, especially if they knew anything was happening with Travis, to make a run at Kyle McCord. That would have been the guy. He's the quarterback, because I liked what I saw at Ohio State, and I liked what I saw at Syracuse. But, you know, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, everybody's killing Schaaf because of a couple of ugly passes. New Orleans making that move early. But listen, they obviously didn't want to deal with Shedeur, and they needed a quarterback. And this kid also is going to be 26 in 5 minutes, and they want him to, you know, play quarterback as well.
I like Seattle picking up Milroe.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I agree.
We know what he can bring running the ball behind center. So you can install a couple of packages there. Plus, with Darnold, assuming Darnold is now a legitimate starting quarterback in the NFL, you know, you don't have to start Milroe right away.
Yep.
I agree. The thing about Jalen is he had some good games. Oh, he's a wildly inaccurate passer.
Maybe they can hone it. Maybe they
so
can.
Was Jalen Hurts, by the way. Jalen Hurts was not the most accurate kid in college either.
Hurts has improved a lot in the pros.
Oh, he's been great.
Now, the only other QB thing that I had was, I was surprised, even though they're probably bringing in Aaron Rodgers, that Pittsburgh didn't take one of these young quarterbacks until the sixth round when they took Howard.
Yep.
I mean, I was surprised that they didn't take one of them up until, you know, it kind of surprised me. Even, you know you're bringing in Rodgers, but I don't know. Darren?
Pittsburgh was interesting to me. They drafted Caleb Johnson, the running back out of Iowa, who was a real physical kid. They drafted Jack Sawyer, the defensive end out of Ohio State, who's a real kind of like, you know, bubbly physical kind of kid. And then they got Will Howard, who's kind of like a gamer, kind of tough kind of guy. They drafted three guys that actually look like Steelers to me in college. So, I mean, you know, they actually fit the Mike Tomlin build to me. I don't know. I mean, do I think Will Howard is great? No. Yeah, and I thought they would go a little earlier on the quarterback position as well. But Pittsburgh has a lot more holes than people realize, because they seem to find a way to win these close games even though they get outplayed. And they have to clean it up. But I thought the pickup of those three guys kind of stood out to me. I think they got three gritty players on it.
I think just one of the – Tampa Bay I thought was the funniest. You know, the seventh round they draft Tez Johnson, who's about 155 pounds, the lightest player – once he makes the roster in the NFL. Unrestricted free agent, they signed Desmond Watson at 449 pounds as the heaviest player in the NFL. 300 pounds of difference between two players on the roster.
Two other things that stood out to me, Cleveland, they draft Gabriel and Sanders like we talked about. They also draft Judkins and Sampson. So it was like, you know, you got to draft two quarterbacks, two running backs. Listen, I'm not trying to.
Is this a fancy team?
Yeah, they needed probably a little bit more depth, in my opinion. Baltimore also had an interesting – they drafted a kicker in the sixth round. That probably means Justin Tucker plus allegations equals bye-bye.
Yeah.
No tolerance in Baltimore, and the Tucker regime or the Tucker era is over in Baltimore. So the automatics seem to go away there a little bit. To me, Rams trade out of the first round like they always do. That's no real secret there.
Okay.
I thought Arizona had the best draft, by the way. I thought Walter Nolan in the first round as a defensive tackle was great. And Will Johnson, who I was hoping the Jets would have jumped on in that second round, the cornerback from Michigan that fell, but probably would have been a top 10 pick had he not gotten injured.
Yeah.
They got him in the second. Seven of their eight picks were on defense. I really liked Arizona's draft. Again, we have no idea until like 3 years from now if we're right on any of this crap.
Yeah.
And I think Seattle also, I know he's my guy, but, you know, traded up in the second round to get
Emmanuel Warren.
I mean, the fact that he fell all the way to the top of the second round, I was shocked.
Well, the knock on him, and I'm not saying it's real because you watched him more than I do, is he doesn't play as fast as his numbers showed at the combine. You would know better than me.
He's a player.
I'm not disagreeing with you. They're just saying that he wasn't as effective as with that, but I thought he was a good player. But anyway, the draft is done now, and we'll find out in a couple of years how we do.
Yep. All right, let's move on to the NBA. We'll start it off with the Knicks. So they lost last night to Detroit 106-103. They are still up 3-2, game 6 going back to Detroit. Kev? Anything on the Knicks? You want to talk about the Knicks?
Was there anything interesting with them? Boy, when we left last Wednesday, they were 1-1. They go into Detroit. Game 3, they had the fourth quarter lead, held them off 118-116. Cat 31-8. Brunson nearly a triple-double, 30, 9 assists, 7 rebounds. OG 22, Bridges 20. You know, one of those high-scoring type of games that we've seen from the Knicks a lot. Then game 4, you know, they had the lead at halftime, pretty good lead. They get outscored 28-14 in the third. You think, okay, they're going back to the Garden up tied at 2-2. Then they made a terrific comeback in the fourth. Brunson really rallied the team, finished with 32-11. Cat 27-9. Get the last bucket there to make it 94-93. And then the big no call at the end of the game there on the three by Detroit. You know, to me, that's a game that for the game, 17 fouls on each team. They let everything go in that game. That would have been a tough spot to call a foul. Now, if you're a Detroit fan, you're pissed as hell about that.
I thought Hardaway moved his hip. I thought Hardaway caused the contact. I thought that Hart was vertical. I thought that he was in his lane. I didn't think he went into the shooter.
Yep.
Again, I'm rooting for the Knicks.
I think but
Tobias Harris basically was out of bounds when he passed the ball out, and he also kind of tackled Hart to get the rebound, and that wasn't called either, and that, it shouldn't have been called either. You don't want to call a loose ball foul as teams are struggling, so don't get me wrong. I didn't think it was an egregious enough call where it was a foul where he got him on the arm or anything like that. I thought Hardaway was trying to draw it. That was what I took. Rather than trying to hit the shot, he tried to draw a foul.
With 34 fouls in the game evenly split, they let them play. And I don't think you could call one there on what was really a close, questionable call at best.
I agree. I agree with you, Kev.
So now they're up 3-1. They're in great position. Game 5. 106-103 loss, 16 for 27 from the foul line. And then the big controversy with Tibbs there. Hart and Brunson injured. They go out. 2:57 left. They check out Hart. Brunson walks it off. They're there, ready to come back in.
Call it!
I don't care if I don't have any timeouts left. Call it.
This is Mr. Clutch. He won the Mr. Clutch Award, whatever the hell you want to call it, for the NBA this year. I don't care what he shot for the game. I don't care how much he struggled offensively. You get Jalen Brunson back out on the damn court. I don't care if you want to foul somebody. I don't agree with fouling them. Call your damn timeout. I don't care about the timeout. You may not need it.
You
get Brunson back out there. Maybe he scores enough that you don't worry about a timeout at the end of the game.
Kev,
you do that, or you dribble the ball up and bounce it off somebody's knee. You do something stupid, but I would call the timeout.
There's also there will be seven other stoppages because they got to look at every damn call, every damn play. Don't worry about your damn timeout. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. And then and Brunson's the clutch player. Hart's the kind of the heart and soul of the team.
Yeah.
Get them both on the goddamn courts. But Tibbs is like coaches. This I get it, Thibodeau. But this is why you're going to lose your job after this year.
Yeah, he is.
Because you're not going to get any further than you got last year. And the reason why, Kev, is simple. Boston had Orlando 3-1. They put their foot on their neck in the second half and pulled away. Cleveland had Miami in game four, and they beat them by 55. Even though Milwaukee choked it away, Indiana at home found a way to beat them and end that series in five and not let it go back to Milwaukee. The Knicks, on the other hand, are sitting there struggling every single night with a good Detroit team. I'm not here to insult them, but this is why they are not going to go far. They don't, whatever the chemistry is or the coaching is or whatever is not working for this team. And, yeah, they're going to get by this series. I think they're going to win game six, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But it's not about that. It's about now you got to play Boston. And right now, it doesn't look like they can match up, to be perfectly honest. I mean, down the stretch of the game, without those two players in for a while, every shot's by Bridges. I need the ball to go to town. And that's on the coach. Yeah. Get the play in. Get it to Towns. I don't care if they double him. Let him pass out of it. At least give him the touch.
I mean, you 2:57, as the clock winds down to about 2 minutes, I guess he gave it a couple of possessions. Two possessions, you know, one each way.
That's it.
But once you get down to about 2 minutes,
time out.
Call it.
It's then you bring him back in, you're down six. It's already too late.
Yeah.
All right, around the rest of the East, Kev?
Well, like I said, Cleveland won by
50. I'm sorry, I stole your thunder, Kev.
Cleveland won by 55 in game four, set a record 122-point differential in the four-game series. I mean, they just gave them no chance. And like I said, Celtics 4-1, Pacers 4-1. Giannis, I mean, did everything he could. 30 points, 20 rebounds, 13 assists. And then gets Halliburton's father in his face after the game. What the hell is your father doing on the court?
Tyrese was embarrassed by it, actually. He was.
I mean, they've all apologized.
Tyrese was embarrassed by his father right after the game. He said it was unacceptable.
Yeah. I mean, just
I'll
just
give him a little credit for that.
Yep.
Out west, OKC swept. I don't think we were surprised at that at all.
Once Ja went down, there was no shot.
Yep. Denver leads 3-2 in a series that we all thought was going to go seven anyway. Minnesota, Golden State are playing tonight. They were both up 3-1 going into tonight.
Houston has a 13-point lead of the last I saw. And there
Houston
was just like a little mini brawl. Little mini brawl on the court between Houston and Golden State. I didn't see who it was, though.
Minnesota Lakers. Tibbs very jealous of J.J. Redick in the other game the other night when he played all five players for the entire second half. No subs. That was Tibbs' dream. and the Lakers were gassed by the end of the game, and they blew it. Don't you have to sit people?
Listen, as good as Doncic is, by the way, the best player on the court has been Minnesota's kid. Why am I blanking on his name? The star.
Edwards. Anthony Edwards. He's been incredible.
He's been lights out.
Yep. So, you know, the series went either in the East, you know, the Knicks are the only team going still. The West, we've got probably three series still going on in the weekend, you know, in this everlasting first round that takes, you know, a month and a half, I think, to play.
It's horrible. I think Minnesota takes out the Lakers tonight, actually.
I hope so.
They do. I can't stand them. And LeBron the other night when they lost in the fourth quarter there, what do you have, 0 points?
Zero for three or something like that in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Way to show up, LeBron.
And, you know, adding J.J. Redick, just another guy I've always hated as a coach, just made it even easier. add more Duke guys so I can really hate this team.
Yeah. Next thing you know, Shane Battier is going to be the assistant.
Grayson Allen will come in as a backup that never plays.
There you go.
It'll be the ML call waving the freaking towel on the bench.
Yep.
All right, let's move over to the NHL. So we only had one local team in this. And last night, the Devils in double overtime were eliminated by Carolina. Devils played a good game. I watched some of it. Third period, they were really playing hard. Overtime, first overtime was good. And then goal came in the second overtime. Devils are home. No local teams left in hockey. Darren?
I think Carolina's the best team in the East that I've seen. I think if all things go equal, and you could argue, you know, Toronto, you could argue Florida, you could argue all these. I think Carolina, if Anderson's in net, and he wasn't last night, Devils jumped out 3-0 and just couldn't hold it. But also, I mean, Markstrom played great. I mean, he just had 50 shots on the kid. Yeah. I mean, there's only so much he could do. They're complete, that defensive pairing back there with Slavin leading the way. Offensively, guys like Aho and you know, they just, and, you know, Jarvis, they just find a way to score goals. Their forecheck is ridiculous. And, you know, Devils fought, but they just were not nearly as good. And the loss of Jack Hughes, which, you know, Kevin and I, we, and Eugene, you know, we all discussed last week,
was
the difference maker.
Okay. Also in the East, Washington actually took out Montreal tonight.
Yep.
4-1 win tonight. Washington takes a series 4-1. Toronto and Ottawa. Toronto leads 3-2 at the moment. We had 3 straight games go into overtime. Games 2, 3, and 4 all went into overtime. Toronto looks like they can beat anybody in the league, and then they play like they played last night and lose 4-0 to Ottawa. Kev, it's true.
Oh, yeah. They can't close anybody out. That's the problem. This team is 0-12 in the last 12 games trying to close somebody out.
And that's been Toronto for the last 5 years.
Absolutely.
They just don't close anybody out, and they have all the talent in the world.
The last series in the East, Tampa Bay and Florida tied at 2. Game 3 going on right now.
Florida 3-1, G.
Florida
3-1. Florida's up a goal.
3-1, I'm sorry. Yeah. And Florida right now is up a goal with 11 minutes left in the third. So they may close that out tonight.
A lot of dirty hits in that series. Guys have been suspended. You know, Ottawa and Toronto, 2 very physical series also.
Yeah. Darren, you want to tell us about the West?
Oh, how the West was won. I got to tell you, this has been really exciting, actually. Edmonton, by the way, just to mention them first, they were down 2-0 to L.A., down in the third period of Game 3, stormed back, won it in overtime, then blew them out Game 4, then they were down last night, came back and won, and now they're up 3-2 going home. So they have a real good shot of getting through. Vegas was down 2-1 to Minnesota. They won Game 4 in overtime. They won Game 5 by a goal. They're up 3-2, so they have a shot. Vegas and Edmonton look like they could play each other, which would be pretty good. Winnipeg, St. Louis is 1-1 tonight, 2-2 in the series. Each team is one at home, but St. Louis dominated Winnipeg and St. Louis. They just beat them. They beat the crap out of them. Winnipeg struggled more with St. Louis than St. Louis did at home against Winnipeg.
Those 2 games, 12 goals to 3 in 2 games. They just total, you know.
St. Louis is playing outstanding. Ever since the coaching change, they were great during the regular and during the regular season, and now they're kicking it up. And the series we thought was going to be great, it's been great. Dallas and Colorado is just – you feel like you're watching a Western Conference final in the first round.
Yeah.
I mean, this is everything you want. The edge that I like Dallas to win the series on was simply Ottinger, and he's been great. Even in the games they've lost, he's been unbelievable. But this is just playmaker after playmaker, great goal after great goal. 3-2 Dallas, going to Colorado for game 6 tomorrow night, not tonight. So we'll see what happens there. But hockey, the West has been great. The West has been outstanding. The East a little shakier, but the West has been unbelievable so far.
All right. We'll shift over to baseball just to give some updates. Yankees at 18-12, Mets at 21-9. Mets are 13-1 at home. 8-2 in their last
10-2 in the last 12. So even though Atlanta's gotten hot, Atlanta lost today to Colorado, but they're 9-3 in the last 12. So they've still lost the game. I thought it was interesting. Jose Urena, you know, the good old 3 innings, 5 runs, 15 ERA, gets a save in a 19-5 game. For his efforts, he gets DFA'd.
Yep.
Lindor's been terrific, you know, in April for a change. Pete's still been great all year. Nimmo in that 19-5 game. Two home runs, a three-run home run, a grand slam.
Nine.
Tied the franchise record, nine RBIs.
Nine RBIs, wow.
And very quietly, as my daughter would call him, Baby Acuña, he's hitting 300 this year.
He got hot lately. He was hitting under two for a while. Now he's gotten hot.
He's gotten hot. The big thing's going to be for them, you know, young less so, but A.J. Minter. Talk about that lat injury, maybe, depending on how the test results go. You know, they're talking about season-ending surgery, possibly. They did sign Brooks Raley, mm-hmm. coming back from Tommy John. So he's in the minors trying to rehab or finish off his rehab and get back into the majors, hopefully by the midseason. But the bullpen's going to be tested a little bit here. They've been very fortunate the last couple of games. Like I said, Urania gave him three. Herget came up for a game, gave him two innings last night. And then tonight, they brought Brandon Waddell to be the bulk reliever, as Darren loves, you know, because Brazoban was the opener.
I hate the opener.
But, you know, unfortunately, Ryan Stanek's hit a little bit of a slump here. And, you know, the Mets are looking like they may go down for their third loss in their last 13. All three losses would be by Ryan Stanek.
Well, it's 4-2 right now. I mean, and they're in this game.
You know, this game's up as a tie run.
Yeah, this game's not over yet.
No.
So they can come back on it. Listen, they're playing great. The Minter injury is the biggest thing. Diaz also has not been as sharp in the pen. Garrett's been great. So really what it comes down to, and I hear some Met fans talk about, I'm worried about Soto. It's 1 month in. I don't know why people are, but maybe I'm being too optimistic.
They're winning without Soto doing much yet. Once he gets on track here. And you look at his career numbers. I mean, in April, he's a .240 hitter in April.
Yeah.
He's better when the weather gets warm.
He'll get hot.
The one thing is, and a guy at work, a guy Rob I work with, huge Met fan, was like, and I watched it afterwards. He told me about three web gems in the same inning last night. And it was pretty cool. It was like watching Van Slyke, the Ozzie Smith play in the same inning. I was like, Jesus, it was really well done. And you know, listen, we're all kind of old school guys. We used to love watching great defensive plays. We love web gems. I mean, Ray Ordonez was just a fun guy to watch playing shortstop for the Mets, even though he hit .220 because of, you didn't know what he was going to do defensively. So we get a kick out of at a good defense.
His major league debut, I believe, was that throw to the plate against the Cardinals, right?
Absolutely. Got him at the plate. Florida goes up 5-3, by the way, on Tampa. So let's see what happens there if they close them out. But hopefully the Mets can do something.
Pete's up with two on and nobody out. Don't
care. They got a shot to win this game here. They're right back in it.
I have one baseball point for you guys, and that is we all thought the White Sox were going to be horrible, and they are. They are 7-22. However, even at 7-22, they do not have the worst record in the majors. That is the Colorado Rockies, who are now 5-25.
They won today. They beat Atlanta.
Yep.
To avoid tying the 1988 Baltimore Orioles for the worst 30-game start. You know, the Orioles that lost 21 in a row.
Yeah, they started the season 0-21.
They were 4-26. So Colorado improved to 5-25.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable.
And Eugenio Suarez becomes the 19th player with four home runs in the game. Unfortunately for them, it was four home runs, five RBIs, and they lost 8-7 in 10 innings.
Yep.
Just a quick point. I mean, the Yankees are the Yankees. They're playing well. You're getting everything you want out of Freedom Rodon. The Devin Williams demotion was overdue. It's finally here. Weaver's been great. Cruz has been outstanding since they acquired him. So these are all real good things. Aaron Judge, just for a minute, going into tonight, because it only got better. He's hitting .412 coming into the day, okay? He's number one in the league in average. He was tied for third in homers, but now he tied the lead with the homer tonight, I believe, right? I think so. So that gets him up to 10. He's number one in hits. He's number one in on-base percentage. He was .512 going into tonight, and it went higher. His slugging is number one. OPS number one. Runs scored, tied for second. And for all I know, he got even with it tonight. I'm just saying, this guy is so much fun to watch. If he could ever just get out of his own head in the playoffs, he's going to be one of the funnest players ever. And you know what? He's kind of a classy guy, and there's very few people that really can't like him. But he's unbelievable.
These are numbers we haven't seen since steroid era Bonds.
Exactly. He's just amazing. One other quick stupid baseball stat, and, you know, I like to throw these out there every now and then. Tony Gwynn, because he came up again. From 1988 to 2002.
Shot. Tony Gwynn.
From 88 to 2002, 15-year stretch, Tony Gwynn hit 302 with two strikes. Next highest guy was Wade Boggs at 262, followed by the immortal Louis Polonia at 261.
Louis Polonia. Wow.
Third. But Gwynn was 40 points better than – imagine 302 with two strikes. Anyway, I just thought that was an amazing stat. And Teoscar Hernandez has really kind of come on with the ribbies. He took the league lead before tonight, so we'll see what happened. Pete having almost as good a year as Judge. It's just you can't put him in the same category yet because he's like Judge 70 points behind OPS. But Pete is playing great too, so you don't want to take that away from him either.
I'd like a baseball stat next week that did not involve Tony Gwynn.
I gave you one last week. I gave you the pinch runner, so shut up.
All right. Before we get to the Derby, any other points you want to go around? Darren?
Three quickies. But World Boxing Council, okay, the WBC. You guys remember the story of Bridger Walker from a couple years back? You may or you may not. But he, in July of 2020 in Salt Lake City, Utah, this six-year-old boy saved his little sister, who was three, from a German Shepherd attack. The Shepherd would have undoubtedly killed her. He had 90 stitches, had to go in for surgeries, stuff like that. But and then out of the surgery, his line was, if anyone had to die, it would be me because I'm the big brother. This week, the WBC recognized him as a full-time world champion. He has the official WBC historical record for being the best fighter in the world for a day.
That's awesome.
Wow. Massive respect. That's great.
That's awesome.
For Bridger Walker. I just thought it was an awesome story when I saw it.
Yeah.
Stupid golf thing just that came across my feed. Tiger Woods between 2004 and 2006 had 1,543 putts from 3 feet. He missed three of them. College basketball, and it's not exactly what you think. Well, first, St. John's, they signed a top 75 wing today. They got Kelvin Odie, who's going to be the only freshman, I think, on the roster. Yeah. And they went out and got Hanjay Tamba, who's a 6'11 guy that'll be that backup big man. But Sacramento State, the Hornets, hired Mike Bibby as their head coach. And now they brought in Shaq as their GM.
Yep.
And the first guy they got was a guy named Mikey Williams to go there. He was a 5-star that went to Memphis, but got in trouble. And it never got to play at Memphis. So now they have a 5-star going to play for the Hornets at Sac State. Kev, what happened in the Met game that has you flinching?
He looks okay. Pete got hit in the hands again. Okay. Jeez, I mean, this guy gets hit more often. and you know what? He's up there with – he's got the foot thing, but he gets up there without any protection. No elbow shit, no anything. He old school. Go ahead, hit me.
Not bad.
Vientos up. Bases juice, no out.
They should win this game.
Yeah, we hope so.
They should find a way to win, at least tie it. But they should.
Vientos hit one already tonight.
So anyway, that's all I have for my little other notes. So it wasn't all about Tony Gwynn. I gave you the WBC and I gave you the golf. So shut up.
Oh, and we don't miss too many three-footers because I think they're usually gimmies when we play, right?
Yeah, we don't miss them at all. But they,
that's good.
They make him do it.
All right, and then we go to Kentucky. Kentucky home.
20-horse field, okay?
20 horses.
Just the thing to remember about this race for everybody, okay? 7 o'clock. I think NBC and Peacock will be broadcasting it. None of these horses will ever run against 19 horses again. None of these horses have ever run in front of a crowd of well over 100,000 people in the infield. So there is a lot of stuff that goes on here. The weather is supposed to be dry by the time the race starts. Okay. There was supposed to be some rain in the overnight, but the track still has a chance to be fast, which is all you really want. 20 horse field. Listen, there's a bunch of players. I'm just going to go by them real quick, okay? Citizen Bull is the one, okay? All the speed horses, by the way, are on the inside for the most part, the 12 and the 20, okay? The one is a speed horse, Citizen Bull. He's the fastest of all of them, okay? He gets out quickest. Baffert, back from suspension, and Garcia. Front runner, the number one post, has not won this since 1986 when Ferdinand won it, okay? The two is Neo Oquos. 124-1 right now on the odds. Okay, he started off at 30. You got Joseph Safi and Flavian Pratt aboard. Another speed horse, 2-for-7 lifetime. The two post hasn't won since 1998, And the thing is, this horse can't get the distance from what everything you're reading. The three's Final Gambit, who people seem to like. Big Grace, 30-1. You got Cox and Machado. Horse is faster last time without Lasix. I've never seen a horse actually improve speed when they took the Lasix away. 2-4 Lifetime. You won the Jeff Ruby. That wasn't a great race, though. The four's Rodriguez, 16-1 now. Baffert and Smith, okay? 58-year-old Mike Smith aboard. Another horse that needs to run from up front. He was great in the wood. 2-5 Lifetime. American Promise, 19-1 is the five horse. You get Dwayne Lucas, all 89 years young of him, and Juarez aboard. Another front runner from the inside. Distance will be fine. Let's see if Lucas can get there at 89.
Justify it, Daddy.
Exactly. Six, Admire Dayton, Japan horse. Kondo and Lemaire aboard. Wire to wire in the UAE Derby, right? Very exciting. Dubai winners are 0-20 in the Derby and never hit the board once, just so you know. Luxor Cafe, the other Japanese horse, running next to each other, 20-1. Nishikawa and Marrera, the guys training and riding. American Pharaoh horse, 4-6 Lifetime, a step below last year's Japanese runners from everything I've seen. 8 Journalism, the favorite, 3-1, horse I've been on all year. You get McCarthy and Umberto Rispoli. Won 4 in a row, has won every race he's run with 2 turns. Best speed figures in the race. In fact, the best 2 speed figures in the race. Best horse in the field running outside California at the 1 and 2 there. And he can run his own pace, can be anywhere in the race. Number 9, Burnham Square, has now moved up to the second spot. Was 4 earlier in the week. 9-1, Wilson Hernandez. Brian Hernandez won this race last year. 3-6 Lifetime, great speed figure. Has improved his speed figure every single race. He's a dead closer. Problem with him, only 2 geldings have ever won this race. Funny Side won it, and Mind That Bird. The unkindest cut of all can have consequences. The 10, Grande, 17-1, Pletcher and Velasquez. Horse was great in the last race. Finished second. You get Rapoli, the guy that's giving St. John's all the money. So if you like St. John's, you might like this
and
one.
And Cross.
Yeah, absolutely. Pletcher is the trainer. Been unlucky 2 years in a row with Forte and Fierceness. The horse did not run as a 2-year-old. So that's usually no horse really wins when they haven't won as a 2-year-old. But the 10 position, Gino, 29.5% of the time makes the board. Highest in the field, the 10.
And that 11, is Grande.
Flying Mohawk, 55-1, Whitworth and Ramos. Worst buyer numbers in the field. Never raced on dirt. Why is he here? The 12, East Avenue, a speed horse that's actually in a good spot. Walsh and Franco, 52-1, though. This was a great 2-year-old that has kind of fallen off as a 3. Only speed horse with a decent post, like I said. Lots of speed in this race. Won't be able to steal it. 13, Publisher. Here's the maiden in the race, okay? Asmussen and Ortiz. You want to hear an interesting thing about the maiden? So Publisher's a maiden. Asmussen is 0-26, and Ortiz is 0-8, Erod Ortiz. So none of these three have done anything to ever win in this kind of race.
Daddy's American Pharaoh, though.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the third horse with Pharaoh. But Pharaoh's 10 years old. This is the first time he's had a Derby runner. He's got 3.
I can't believe it's that old
10
already.
10 years. Horse looked good at Churchill. And, as you know, he's actually got a relaxed personality, which they say might run well for this course, especially with the crowd there. He's a dead closer. 14, Tistastic, another dead closer. You got Asmussen and Rosario, 21-1 on this horse. Horse is 3-8 Lifetime with 2 of those wins on turf. Shouldn't be in here. Dead closer, but he's a turf horse. I mean, I know people like him, and he might close here, maybe in your exotics, but I don't see it. The 15, Render Judgment, 199-1. The trainer didn't want to go in this race. The owner made him do it. It doesn't make me want to bet him. Only 1 win, but it wasn't Churchill, by the way. 16, Cold Battle, 43-1 now. Briley, 72-year-old trainer, never been here before, with Vargas aboard. Versatile horse that is just, he's a hardworking kind of horse. Won 4 different tracks, 5-8 Lifetime, but struggled at 1 1/8. So how the hell is he going to run 1 1/4? I don't know. 17 is Sandman, 12-1. Metallica people throwing all sorts of stuff at this horse. Cassie and Ortiz. This horse is 3-8 with the win at the Arkansas Derby, but the post 17 is 0-45 in this race. Never won it. So bred for the distance, worst 3 races were all at Churchill. So we'll see what happens. The 18, Sovereignty, 11-1. Mott and Alvarado. Last race they lost, but Alvarado was not aboard. He was hurt. There's another dead closer as well. Mott's only win was via disqualification in the Derby in 2019. Post not ideal, but closed great in the Florida Derby. The 19, Chunk of Gold, Here's one you might like. It's got Weston Loveberry, 1-for-4 lifetime, but this is a $2,500 horse. They bought this horse for $2,500. He's already made his money back by a billion times or whatever it is. Lynching never finished worse than second. Seems a step below these, however, but still. And the 20, Owen Almighty, he was out of the race, in the race, out of the race, now back in the race. Bad Bluegrass. He's got Lynch and Castellano aboard, another 199-1. He's a speed horse from the 20. He's not going to get there. He's going to have to win it from off the pace. Distance is an issue also. Post position, another issue. So these are the 20 horses. I went through them as fast as I could. Gino, who do you like?
I like Rodriguez. I think Baffert comes back with some force here. As far as my bet, I like Luxor Cafe. He's a good closer. Journalism, you've been on all time. I'll probably do Rodriguez Luxor with both of them and journalism in an exacta somewhere. I think that's probably what I'm going for.
Okay.
Kev?
I'm looking for a little bit of an upset here. I'm going to go Sovereignty, the 18 horse. He won the Street Sense, won the Fountain of Youth, was second in the Florida Derby. He's a closer. Like you said, Darren, a lot of speed inside. This sets up that if he can get – he's going to be outside, so he can set his own pace and let the speed horses kill each other. And, you know, he can set up his own path to victory here. I like Sovereignty. I'm going to go with Mike Rapoli. I'm going to take Grande to come in second here. And then to finish off the exotics for third and fourth, I'll go Luxor Cafe. I like him as well. And I'll throw Tiztastic in there to pass the tired horses and get fourth for the superfecta.
Well, I'm always weary about taking a horse all the way on the outside in this race.
If they're closers, it doesn't matter because they're going to just position. But I get your point.
There's just so many horses, though. They go so far outside to get in. I always worry about that.
I think, you know, if the jockey plays it right, you know, somebody like Sovereignty who's going to close, he's going to let them all go, and he's going to go immediately inside. And I say, go ahead.
I got you. Darren?
So, interesting stat, okay? The last three horses that had the two best buyer numbers in the coming into the race would Justify, California Chrome, and American Pharaoh. So okay. I'm going to take Journalism. I've been on him all year, so I'm not going to go away from him. I just think he's the best horse by a lot. I think he can do whatever he wants in this race. Again, 20 horses, you never know. I'm going to put Burnham Square in behind him, which ends up now being the second choice. But when I made the pick, he was the fourth choice.
Yep.
And I'm going to put Grande in there as well. My fourth horse is going to be the maiden. I'm going to take Publisher to kind of close and pass tiring horses to be the fourth. Sovereignty would be the other horse I'll throw to my exotics. And if I was going to take one of the speed horses to try to hold up, it'd be East Avenue. So, listen, it's a crapshoot. Again, 20 horses. Who breaks well? Who breaks poorly? You know, I'd like the one to have a shot a little bit more if he wasn't on – if he didn't have the one position, which is just a tough spot to win from. But the Derby should be exciting, boys. I mean, I don't know. It's always the most exciting 2 minutes in sports every year.
Absolutely.
Why not again? And that's our little Derby preview. If you have any questions on it, just reach out to us. We'll answer anything you got. It might be wrong, but we'll still answer. Dee, back to you, pal. Anything else?
No, that's it. I think that's it for this week.
All right, then we go back to me.
The Mets did not pull it out tonight.
The Mets did not. I'm surprised, but the base is loaded. But we'll see what happens. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin here with Gino talking about the wonderful, wild, wacky world of sports. A wacky world of sports where Shedeur Sanders as a fifth-round pick becomes more important than any of the first-round picks in a draft. That's how ridiculous the NFL has gotten. Please download the podcast any way you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We post a lot on social. We post videos. We post lots of videos, actually. Like them and please share them. Share them. Thank you. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.